Hey folks, welcome to another episode. It's Bigger Than Camping Show. That's exactly what this is. We're going to have an amazing conversation this show. We're going to talk to some amazing people, amazing individuals, amazing folks around the world. And today we have a special guest, and he is incredible. He is masterful. But let me tell you who I am. My name is Earl B. Hunter Jr. I'm the founder and president of Black Folks Camp 2. Our job is to remove fear, add knowledge, and invite more folks to camp and enjoy the outdoor lifestyle with any and everyone. Listen, folks, we're going to create more unity in the outdoor community and beyond. On this show, we talk about everything. As a matter of fact, our next guest is someone who I respect dearly. I've been knowing him for quite some time, and he is a man of many talents, but most importantly, he's a man that knows music. And I love music. And so without further ado, I would like to introduce you to the man of the hour. His name is DJ Big G. And guess what? He is not just a DJ.
Oh.
G is actually a DJ that is blind. And if you know anything about music, you ain't knowing about DJing. DJing a party while you're blind can be very difficult, but this cat makes it very easy. DJ G, welcome to the show, baby.
What's happening, Earl?
Good, man. Listen, what's so cool about this is that, G, so I know you, baby. I've been knowing you for quite some time. I think your story is so fantastic, and I wanted to bring you on to It's Bigger Than Camping Show to tell everybody your story, tell everybody who you are and what you do. So let's just get right into it.
All right.
Tell us about you, man. Tell us about who you are and tell us what you get done, how you do it.
Okay, check it, man. First of all, man, thanks for having me on the show. My name is DJ Big G. Yeah, I'm a native of South Carolina, born in Aiken, South Carolina, and I reside in Columbia, South Carolina. I traveled everywhere, man, across the states, most of part, man. You know, I've done a few things outside the country. But in general, man, I consider myself to be a nice DJ.
Right.
I won't go as far as saying dope because there's others, man, that I'm like, is just good at it. But telling my story, man, you know, I've been doing this here probably since the 90s, the 80s and the 90s.
Oh, that's a good era right there.
Oh, man, what you talking about, man?
Yeah, that's the era right there, G. You got to expound on that. You got to get back, though. You know, you were on those turntables, man.
Man, look at how I was scratching, tearing up my mama's stereo at the same time.
Wow.
Getting records and stuff, man. We had a record store downtown, Aiken, called Quality Record Store. So I would go in there, you know, and ask the lady to get me a record. And she would take this long pole and reach all the way to the top and pull out one of the records, you know, whether it's Rick James or the Temptations or Donna Summers or anybody of that sort back then, you know, pull it down and put it in this thin black bag.
Woo.
Slide it in there, you know, on my way out, I may want to grab a couple of those incense, you know, the black love or stuff like that, or the Egyptian musk.
Set the mood, right?
Right, right. So creeping with those, man, out the door, man. I started out, man, with just collecting a few albums and stuff at home. My brother was a DJ, and my sister's husband at the time, he was a DJ. So, you know, having access to music, always had access to music. Starting off my DJ journey, man, I was always like associated with crews and stuff like that. So there was one crew in particular, man, was on Swiss. I was associated with them. And then there was another crew, man, called Top Choice. These guys, man, you know, they end up, you know, being renowned and everything, you know, service a lot of clubs and stuff like that. And, you know, one night in particular, they had a block party next door to my house because the playground right next door to my house. And the guys from Top Choice said, hey, man, we want to leave our stuff over at your house. We'll come back and pick it up tomorrow. So, you know, it sat there in the living room for 2 or 3 days, and that turned into a week. You know, it's the summertime, so, you know, I'm not going to let it sit there and just sit there. I packed it up, pulled it up. I put everything together. Then I slid everything out to the porch where it was facing the playground, and I started spinning.
Ooh.
So everybody like, yo, man, what's going on? It's a party today. Nah, I'm just out there spinning. So I'm just taking records, spinning, practicing and stuff like that. So I took that trade.
Wow, man.
And I moved on to college. I went to Allen University. And there at Allen University, I was kind of, let me backtrack. So also DJing there at the block parties, which was held at my neighborhood house next door to the playground. I also did the skating ring. One of our senators, his nephew DJed there. And we had a few cats from New York that used to DJ at the skating ring. And I used to be peeping over the counter trying to beg the DJ and stuff, like, get out of here. So one day they let me up there, like, yo, he actually good. Let him rock a little bit. Mm. You know, I'm playing and everything, you know, getting the crowd into it. Back in the 80s, we had like parties. Everybody partied and everybody had dance steps and dance moves. Mm. So, you know, you had to make sure they had those.
What was your favorite dance move? Come on now. What was your move?
Man, trust me, man. It was like, I was a break dancer. I ain't gonna lie.
Okay. Back then. You brought that cardboard out. You was up there, you know, you had that cardboard. You know what I'm saying? You spin on your neck, you know what I'm saying? Your shoulder. You was doing it, right?
I got problems now from that, man. But no, we always just get that and the linoleum, you know what I'm saying? Have a strip of linoleum and stuff, fold it up in the bag and stuff, and then throw it out there at the party or throw it out at the playground and just go at it.
So here's the thing, G. I got to go back to this, though. So let me ask you this question. When I met you, G, you were not blind when I met you. You weren't seen blind to me, right? So I'm thinking about this whole DJ deal.
Okay.
You're talking about the 90s, right? And you're talking about the 80s and the 90s. Mm-hmm. So before, you weren't blind. So you could see the crowd. You could see everything. You could feel the movement of it all. Uh-huh. How did that feel, G, in regards to you DJing then and kind of how you're in DJing now?
Okay.
I want to get to that, and then I want to move back to the 90s and the 80s. I want to make sure we didn't skip that part.
Okay, cool. With that, man, like, you kind of get an adjustment in your head. See, now not sighted, man, everything is pictured in my head. And in my head, I have to picture the crowd. In my head, I have to imagine the ladies, particularly on the floor, dancing.
Right.
I have to imagine the fellas over there in the corner, maybe at the bar, bouncing of some sort. Mm-hmm. I got to imagine people coming up, hey, man, you know so-and-so in the house. Okay, cool. I got to imagine them throwing their hands up in the air. So then I do my call response, and that's how I check the temperature of the room. Where my lady's at?
Yeah.
Players in the building, if you got a handful of money, make some noise. Yay!
Hey!
So now I'm checking the temperature. Okay, cool. I know where to go with my music.
Listen, let me tell you what's pretty amazing about that, G. As you started to talk about your life as a DJ, you know, my past life, I was a promoter, big promoter. I promoted some huge parties and big events. And I always respected the DJ because the DJ was able to get the party started and actually make the party go to where it needs to go.
Right.
The host of the party, great. But the DJ is what it is. You play such a huge part into driving this, right?
Right.
And so with that being said, as we go back to the 80s in the 90s, the music has changed, G.
Tremendously.
The music has changed tremendously. So how do you now check the temperature of the room when you have line dancing, you have all these things happening right now in this new music versus the old music that you know?
Okay.
How do you get into this thing, man? This is fascinating to me.
Because you got to intermingle both genres together. I can't just settle up and just play trap music all night long. I can't just play reggae music all night long. Coming the era of the 90s and stuff, man, you know, DJing in college and stuff, you know, not a lot of parties, but here and there, and knowing a lot of DJs, you know, like I know the Sha Kims, you know, who DJ with New Edition, or DJ Clips, who DJ for MC Search from Third Base from Columbia, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And watching these guys, man, it's kind of like to DJ in South Carolina, period, you got to remember Columbia was a melting pot for a lot of colleges. So you got people coming in from D.C., people coming in from Africa, Jamaica, Haiti. Mm-hmm. You got people coming in from Florida. You definitely got people coming in from the West Coast, every blue moon. And then you got the Southerners that's going to be there and the up north cats are coming in from New York. So in a full party, you had to play your R&B. You had to have enough reggae for about 30 minutes. You also had to have your go-go music. You also had to have your house music and your bass music for the Miami, you know, folks back then. Prior to, that was your Southern music, the bass music back then, prior to, you know, the Outkasts, the Scarfaces, the UGKs, you know, the Southerners of those years.
Uncle Luke before that, though. Uncle Luke was killing it.
Yeah,
Trick Daddy.
Not yet. Trick Daddy came in probably in the mid-90s, 2000s. He came on Scar.
95 South.
95 South.
Yeah.
All those cats, man. So,
as you mentioned all this music, G, mm-hmm. and you talk about all the different cultures coming together, it's sort of how we think things here at Black Folks Camp 2 as a company, right?
Right.
We believe that every race, age, gender, and ability should enjoy the outdoors, right? Again, we don't care about your race, age, gender, ability. It's like the DJ. At some point, G, you know, most folks think that because you're a black DJ, you only DJ parties just for black folks, right?
Right.
But I'm sure you've been in realms where you've had to DJ in parties and events where there are different genders, different age, different yeah. abilities, also different races of folks. How does that play a part in how you do your music before you were blind and now that you are?
Well, in both sets, man, you always should prepare. And I mean prepare, like you always set your crates up. You should never go into a party just going to pick music and just take a bunch of requests, because then you end up playing for one or two people as opposed to playing mm-hmm. for the masses. I have to have mm-hmm. hits. Like some cats, you know, in most smaller party would get slightly perturbed when you're like, hey, cuz, I got this song right here on my jump drive. Nah, man, I'm not going to play that to kill my party. Because I got right, the DJ right. had to set a mode and had to set the presence in there to be let folks know, okay, man, this is what's being presented. This is how we're going to run the party. This is how we're going to have fun tonight. Mm. So you make sure everybody's having fun and you play hits. You rarely get requests.
That makes sense. So as we dive into a little more of this particular topic, G, listen, mm-hmm. the bottom line, the storyline is that you're a blind DJ, right?
Right.
I don't look at that, and a lot of folks will look at that as an inability or not being able to do your work, but you tell me all the time, and by the way, I just hired you to do an event maybe a few months ago, and you killed it.
Yeah.
So I know that you can get down, but I got to ask you a question, though. Uh-huh. Again, as you talk about the differences between DJing when you weren't blind or when you because that you are, I'm gonna just take you back somewhere. I gotta ask you this question.
All right,
G, tell me about you going camping. You've been camping before?
Yeah, I was in the Boy Scouts. I went camping a few times.
And how was that?
It was cool at first, man. Until I had to get up out of there.
You had to get up out of there,
man. One of my friend's brother, he and I was supposed to share a tent together. So I didn't mm-hmm. stay in that tent because, you know, he was wild, you know, all mm-hmm. that stuff. So at the end of our camping trip, everybody backed up, you know, had his stuff packed up. So he had the tent that I was supposed to be in with him, balled up, put it over there in mm-hmm. the corner. So the camp master was like, is that your tent? No, sir. Well, you assigned to stay with him? Yes, sir. Where he at? I don't know. Well, you need to clean that tent. No, sir, I didn't stay in the tent. Well, if you don't clean that tent, then you're no longer in the camp. I said, Mama. Mama said, did you dirty that tent up? I said, no, ma'am, I didn't. She said, come on, let's go. And that was it. But before that, I had fun. We went camping. We stayed, I can't remember, man, but we stayed in parts of Aiken in the woods. And we multicultural. You know what I'm saying? It was white kids mm-hmm. as well as black kids. Nobody argued. Nobody fussed. But we all enjoyed being outdoors, you know, playing games and stuff mm-hmm. in the wilderness at night, learning how to start fires, learning how to mm-hmm. pitch a tent, watching the mm-hmm. stars, learning how, you know, to track yourself. You know, we was learning all of that at the time, which I was banking on being there a little longer, but unfortunate mm-hmm. circumstances happened. So, right. you know.
Well, let's just cut to the chase. You know, at Black Folks Camp 2, you know, we've uncovered a lot here at Black uh-huh. Folks Camp 2 as a company. One of our jobs is to have the conversation with the industry to tell them some of the reason why many black folks have not gone camping, have not been in the outdoors, have not really explored the outdoors. We've actually have a lot of data to the fact that black folks, particularly people of color, have a lot of generational fear, a lot of lack of knowledge, and didn't really have a lot of invitation, meaning that the industry has not really invited black folks, for the most part, to come in the outdoors and spend their money. That's the biggest thing. And really, not only spend their money, but really to enjoy the scenery and things of that nature. So now that you are an older individual, you uh-huh. had that experience, though, as a Boy Scout, but you're an older individual now and that you're mm-hmm. blind. G, what is the likelihood that you actually ever go camping again?
I would go. I need a sighted guide.
Okay.
And I would go because
yep.
being blind doesn't prevent me from doing a lot of things, but it opened my other senses to learning how to do things over again.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, you know, like I have friends sometimes get nervous. Come on, man, how you go to the store by yourself? Oh, man, first of all, man, I trust God, number one. Number two, man, they ain't going to hurt me. I got a cane. Right, I'm going to get out if I have to get out.
At some point, right?
Right. I said, but...
And, boy, man, you got to be a crew... You got to be a crew dude, man, to jump on the blind dude with the cane, boy.
Trust and believe, I'll make him famous. Man, do you know that's the dude, right, that got beat up by that blind dude with that cane?
At end of the day, and based on me knowing who you are, you got a low center of gravity. I believe you're gonna scoop somebody, baby.
But no, man.
I know it. G, you know.
Go ahead.
Keep going. I want to hear that story. I want to talk about you talking about your sense of direction, being in the outdoors and things of that nature, and not being scared and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I'd like you to expound on that.
So, you know, man, when I got back to Columbia, man, after my surgery and stuff, man, you know, got back in town. I applied to the Commission for the Blind, South Carolina Commission for the Blind, but unfortunately, COVID settled in for that year of 2020. Mm-hmm. So I had to sit out for about a year, and they ended up the following year getting me a teacher to teach me mobility, mm-hmm. Dr. Shirley Madison. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Madison, she guided me and showed me how to not be afraid and how to use my cane more or less as an antenna. And not necessarily, you know, just, you know, somewhere just to tap. Hey, man, it's your sighted guide. It's going to guide you where you need to be at. So once I've grasped that concept in my head, I see things in my mm-hmm. head the way I need to move.
That's incredible.
So the fear was gone. You know, like where I stayed at one point in time, man, I was literally maybe, okay, I'll tell you exactly, about 35 steps from the garbage can. Mm. When I first tried me getting my mobility training, I would count my steps. But if something threw me off, like somebody hit the horn or something like that, I'm thrown off, then all of a sudden I'm lost because I don't feel where I need to be at. I may have to use my phone and like, hey, call somebody and say, hey, man, can you give me directions? Man, just turn around. You're right there at your house. And I'd be just that close, but didn't know back then. And in retrospect of the whole situation, man, that I went through, man, you know, the trials and tribulations, man, you know, God, you know, I'm a man of God first and foremost. You know, God prepared me for this. Mm-hmm. And it's an indirect way if you realize, man, things that you watch, you took notice of, that you use to survive. Prime example, mm-hmm. like the Book of Eli. I remember watching that movie, first of all. Great movie. Watching it from beginning to the end and not realize that Denzel was blind to the end of the movie. Spoiler. Mm. So... I was watching how when he walked up the steps, how he take his foot and hit the front of the steps. I was watching how he paid attention to sound. So paying attention to that, even as far as going with Ray Charles, you know, counting the steps when he was walking, you know, before he had his mobility, walking, you know, around with the weighted shoes.
Right.
Okay, you know, oh, turn left, right here. There I go. All right, cool.
Right.
I admired that, but didn't know that I would have to experience that.
Right.
So once I grasped those concepts, man, Earl, it's like everything kind of was a little weight taken off my shoulder because, you know, not being sighted, not being able to see the thing that you enjoy, it's like, okay, cool. Where's the challenge? But God said, fear not, man. I got you.
That's right.
That challenge ain't nothing because you're going to overcome that. I'm about to give you a new way to get over that. So when he showed me, like, oh, man, Earl, I hear music differently. I hear sounds differently. Yeah. I pick up on different nuances. I detect different things differently now. And mm-hmm. part of my ministry, man, in a sense, to tell folks about it. Because a lot of folks out here, man, older than me, they've been blind or longer. I've only been blind since 2019. A lot of folks that's been, mm-hmm. you know, lost their vision way before me. Hadn't even grasped half of the concept that I have. But mm-hmm. I'm not talking down about them, but I want to help them. So anything Absolutely. I can do to tell them, I put them on game. You know, there's apps on your phone and stuff, man, that assist you. They be like, man, how you dress mm-hmm. yourself? How you know? The only bad thing I had at one point in time, man, you know, I got so many polo shirts, man, that I couldn't figure out which one was which because they all feel the same if you know that polo club feel.
Right.
So... once I got a few more apps and stuff, man, there's one particular called Be My Eyes, and it has a part in it called Be My AI. I could take a picture of that mm-hmm. shirt, and it'll tell me, hey, yellow shirt, polo horse, green stripes. Come on, man. That cut out me having to call somebody.
Hey, that was that puts you in the game right there, boy.
Oh,
you
man.
Really want a Polo Don then.
Oh man, trust me, man. Like that was shoes, they'll tell you though, and I could feel them, you know. I know one from the other jeans. I could feel a black denim from a blue denim.
Right.
So like, man, it's different things to pick up on.
So G, let me ask you this question. We're gonna go all the way back for a minute because one of the things we didn't skip over and honestly, if you want to know the truth, I'm a man of many words, but I didn't really know how to ask this question. But I'm gonna go ahead and ask this question, G.
Go ahead.
How did you become blind? What happened?
Back in 2016, I had retinopathy and didn't know it. Retinopathy is a situation, man, where you have abnormal blood vessels grow on top of your eye and they burst because they can't sustain.
Right.
So that could be induced by having high blood pressure or it could be induced by being a diabetic with high sugar readings. The misconception most folks assumed that he was a diabetic. I had diabetic tendencies and stuff, man, but at the same time, my sugar wasn't that high of a level, mostly my pressure, because I was one of those guys that didn't really sit down a lot. You know, like now in my time with me, my vision loss, I sit down more than often, but I was always on the go.
Right.
So I started my day up at 9 o'clock in the morning. So 9 o'clock in the morning, I would get up, go to Starbucks, get me some coffee. You know, I used to like driving through the line. You know, I buy one for somebody else behind me.
Oh, you paying it forward, baby.
Yeah. You know, I would go to work. I would set my show up for that day. You know, a lot of folks thought at that time, you know, during my stint at Hot 103.9 at Columbia that I was pre-recorded. I wasn't. I was live every day. I could count the times really on two hands that I was recorded. But I would go there early, prep my show, and then execute my show. Finish that round about 6 o'clock. After I finish that, go grab something to eat. Then I go to the club. Finish the club around about, let me see, finish the club about 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock that morning. And that was a routine for probably like 4 to 5 days out of the week where I didn't get the rest that I needed. But sometimes, man, they'll tell you, your doctor will tell you, like, you're like, well, man, I'm feeling all right, doc. She said, yeah, but you've been feeling bad so long till you think you're feeling right, but your body's not right. And I didn't take heed to that. So during that whole stint, one particular morning, I was auditioning for a job up at WPEG in Charlotte for the midday to be the DJ there. And a big floater came in my eye. I thought something, you know, follow me. I'm like, man, what's that guy at my house following me around? And I'm just swatting my face and stuff. And it was a floater. I never had a floater. So I ran to the restroom, flushed my eyes. That didn't work. Called a doctor. He said, come in. So I was driving an Audi at the time, a Q7 SUV. That thing drove itself to the retina center. They gave me a shot in my eye. I thought that was going to assist me. It didn't. So that 2016 was the month of July. It was a big concert. I was supposed to be up there, man, assisting DJing and all that stuff. And I didn't go. So I was out of work for probably like a month and a half. And everybody knew something was wrong because I never missed a day of work. Never called in. I used to love working that much. Eventually, man, part of my vision came back because everything was just like closing in, getting dark and expanding, getting dark, expanding as I woke up. So once I figured that out, then that's when I started driving again. So I was taking a chance of driving at night. Well, I was following the lines in the road, which I shouldn't have ever done. I mean, following the lines in the road, I'm following the lines in the road. I had the low beams on the Audi, so I'm following the lines in the road to get home or to get where I need to be at. And just so I wouldn't have to get stopped, I was taking the long way where I didn't have to really take the highway at times unless needed. And I would travel like when the traffic was real low. But that was just to get around because, you know, at that time, after my situation, my vision, the word getting around, Big G's losing his vision. Me still trying to hold on. You know, I'm like, nah, I can still DJ.
So you want to show him?
Yeah. Some folks wanted to hear, but other folks want to, you know, be like, oh, man, he just playing. That's just BS, man. You know, man, you know, he can't do it. He messing up. And they would make excuses when I was trying to work and not ask. You know, at some point in time, man, like with folks with disabilities, we have to prove that we can do what we set our mind to, because asking is like we're giving up on ourselves when we know we can do better.
Hey, G, you know, let me tell you this right here.
Mm-hmm.
Even I forgot Oh, I just didn't realize how big of a force you were or you are in the South. Bro, you've been major DJ on radio, major radio.
Oh, yeah.
Every big event that I've ever gone to, I've seen Big G and Lights. Every event that I've known to be that's jumping, somebody said Big G did it. Big G was there. And to be frank with you, as a promoter at that time, I had to have the best. And that's why I hired you. Not only I hired you in Columbia, but I hired you to travel up to Rock Hill all around because I felt like you were the best. Gee, you know, you talked about a little bit about your experience in radio, but I don't think folks truly understand what you were doing on radio at the time when a lot of folks weren't doing it on radio. And talk about your experience of that.
My radio experience, man, I came with a great crew, the Hot Squad, you know, spearheaded by, you know, Jerry Smoking B, then there, which from Atlanta, Georgia, Bill Blackburn, Harold Banks, the lovely Princess Ivory. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget about my guy, Pizzo Coconuts. You know, those are the folks that I started with at the beginning, and that groomed me. Until, you know, we came up to, you know, the regime of my guy, man, Chris Connors. And then we came up with my other partner, Aunt Miggity Mac. Like, starting with radio, man, it'll show you, like, A, timing is of the essence. So just being a good DJ, you got to have timing. It's not who can scratch the best, but basically, man, who can make you, keep you motivated with the music while you're partying. Or even while you just listen to the music on the radio. You know, I was taught at my early ages of radio, man, to learn how to program music. At one point in time, I was programming music, but I didn't know that I was programming music. You know, I would play music, man, like, you know, for example, I play a No Limit set. Then I had to get out that No Limit set, and I had to play a Cash Money set. But then once I figured that out, you know, hey, I learned how to program music, then I figured, okay, I'm programming this music. This is how I get folks to stay on the floor. So then, you know, when I got onto radio, they would show me the fundamentals of that. And I think that would pitch me in, man, to being a great DJ. As far as listening to other jocks, like I used to listen to DJ Jelly out of Atlanta. I used to listen to DJ Hershey out of Atlanta. I listened to Prince Ice. I listened to, who else, man, I used to listen to? JC. I used to like JC, man, from Detroit. I used to listen to a whole bunch of mixtape, and not just for just a song, but just how songs was mixed in. You know, back in the early days, you know, there was the Ron G's and the SNS, you know what I'm saying, mixtapes and stuff, you know, coming up. So, you know, having those cassettes and stuff, and then, oh, man, I can't even forget about the Jamponi tapes, man, that caught me to talking on the microphone.
Jamponi, yeah, man, yeah, you know,
one time, to the right, shake it up, get down, get go. I mean, like, man, that was just keen for me to do.
That's what I love about you, because when I first met you as a DJ, what really turned me on about your style of DJing, being able to talk, turn the music down, and hit right back to it, right? Crowd responds to that. They respond to the, hey, what's, and then, because some DJs are sort of like me, they talk too much, right? They talk too much and don't really know how to spin that music, how to get right. But you, as a DJ, and by the way, G, I'm going to go ahead and put it out there right now. And okay. I know a lot of people may get upset with me by saying this, a lot of the DJs, but G, I'm going to be frank with you, bro. I think you're the best to ever do it, man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
I've been
that.
Around a lot of DJs. I used to have a big promotion company, and I've done this for a long time. And I'm not just talking about spinning the music. I'm talking about the best to ever do it, showing up on time. Brother, the last event that we did was my huge Clash Reunion. And here's a man who is blind, man, showing up, packing your own gear, making sure everything is right. I asked you, do you need help? You're like, nah, I got it. And I'm like, there's so many prima donna DJs out there that think they got it going on, think they the deal, and they don't really have half of what you have, my friend. G, you inspire me, man. You've always inspired me, which is the reason why I wanted to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah, man. I want to take this to another space. Number one, first of all, what's your favorite genre of music?
That's hard to say, man. I listen to so much. I really can't just pick one because certain things I like from each one. Even like when
you're gonna have to pick one now, then.
Even like with DJing and stuff, man, like I like bits and pieces of it. You know, I can relax to jazz in the daytime. I can relax to old school in the daytime. I can relax to 90s and early 2000s music. Mm-hmm. I definitely can rock out the trap music, you know, the Jeezys and the whomever, Gucci Mans and all that stuff, man. You know, because, you know, I've DJed a lot of situations for those guys or with those guys. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But
I'm getting back to it, G. What's your genre, man? What's your favorite genre? Come on. Give me one.
Oh, man. R&B.
Study long, you study wrong. R&B. All right. I figured. Okay, good. All right. So you're an R&B guy. All right. Uh-huh. And as we get to almost to the end of our show, the end of this show with the amazing DJ Big G, and we're here having this amazing conversation. By the way, for those of you on the show hadn't noticed, Big G is a blind DJ. He's not a DJ that can't do work. He's not a DJ that know how to get it done. He's not a DJ that don't know how to spin. He is a blind DJ that's actually making it happen and not allowing his disability or the fact that he's blind keep him from doing work and getting it done. As a matter of fact, I remember G telling me that what inspired him to continue to DJ and getting it done, DJ G told me, I got to eat, man. And when I got to eat, I got to work. Because I got to work, I got to make it happen. And there's a lot of folks out there who use whatever excuse they have in their life to keep them from doing what they're doing. But G, I'm so proud of you, man. I'm so proud to have you on the show. But I gotta ask you this question before I let you go, man. Uh-huh. What is inspiring you right now, G? What is inspiring you right now to be the greatest that you can be?
I'm motivated, man, by God, because I have to inspire others. Here's a saying I got from Bill Duke. I aspire to inspire before I expire.
Ooh. Man, get that to me again.
I aspire to inspire before I expire.
Bro, that's a sound bite right there, and that's dope.
Yeah, I got it from Bill Duke.
To inspire before you expire.
Yeah.
Wow.
Let me tell you, man, like, people use what I do to inspire others, and they'll say something like, if he can DJ, you can walk up next door.
Yes.
If he can DJ, you can learn Braille.
Yes.
If he can DJ, you can do this, you can do that. You know, I don't put that weight on nobody, man, but with so much technology, mm-hmm. what we want to do and what we want to learn is at our fingertips, Earl.
Absolutely.
You know, like, what's that guy's name? Elon Musk, man. He's creating things, man, that can help disabled folks, man, for the next 50 years. And he just started. Mm-hmm. You know, he got the Optimus robot out there, man. You know, for those elderly folks, mm-hmm. he's over 200 pounds. You know, this robot can lift up to 400 pounds. Mm-hmm. This robot can put a heavy person in the tub and take them out. Mm. They got these glasses now to assist blind folks, man, called the Meta glasses,
right?
Where that it can take photos and read the room and stuff, man, and like you can see. And just tell you what everything that they see. No, stuff like that, that's man, amazing. You know, man, it is, man. Stuff like that, man, is letting me know that it's not over. You know what I'm saying? God got me here for a purpose, and it's not over.
Ain't never over for you, man. I can tell by your spirit in your space. But let me tell you, I just want to say this to the listeners out there. As G talked about some of the things that he's doing in his life and some of the things he's overcome, you know, we say this to the industry. The outdoor industry has a duty to aspire, to inspire before they expire, to invite and welcome more folks into the outdoors. Listen, the jig is up just saying that you don't have the ability to do that. The jig is up that the industry is saying that we don't know what's going on. The jig is up where everybody continue to talk here in 2024. We're talking about why people of color hadn't been in the outdoors. We shouldn't even be talking about that kind of stuff at this particular point. We have too much technology. We have folks like Black Folks Camp too as a company helping these companies do this. But also the jig is up before folks of color and anywhere else to feel like the outdoors is not for them, right? Mm-hmm. And so on that note, I want to end this by, first of all, G, telling you that, man, we thank you so much for joining us, brother.
Man, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
We thank you for joining us. Your message is so empowering. Your spirit is so delightful. Your mind is clear. Your body of work speaks for itself. You are an incredible individual in itself, brother. And I say that because I love you, man. I love you because you inspired me. I'm going to tell you this story really quickly, and then we're going to sign off. When you came to that last show and you DJed for us, you DJed for my classmates, and you were getting your items out of the truck, and you were taking those items to the side, and how you were feeling your way through the building and feeling your way and plugging in all of your equipment, I stood there and I watched you. And I said to myself,
ain't
as a 48-year-old man, ain't no way. And I said, there's no complaining on my end because we're going to rock this deal tonight. Ain't nothing in my being, in my soul, that's going to keep us from doing an amazing job because I just watched a man do something that was incredible. And folks, under the sound of my voice, if you can believe it, you can do it.
Amen.
Because I watched Big G do it. With that being said, folks, listen, it's bigger than camping. It's bigger than camping on the show. It is certainly bigger than camping at Black Folks Camp 2. And it's bigger than camping when it comes to inspiring people and making sure that they know that we love them and they know that they are the best thing since ice cream in our book. So, G, listen, won't you tell the folk where they can find you, brother? How can they find you? What social media platforms? Where can they find you? Can they send you a letter in the mail? Can they send you? What can they do to you, baby?
Hey, check it out, man. You know, contrary to belief, you can reach me on Facebook at DJ Big G 803SC. Follow me, I follow back. Or you can catch me on Instagram at Big G 12, BIGGEE 12. Or catch me on X at Big G That's Me, BIGGEE DATSME.
Woo, baby, you put it in. Listen, folks, my name is Earl B. Hunter Jr. I'm the founder and president of Black Folks Camp 2. You have been listening to It's Bigger Than Camping. It is bigger than camping. We want you to like this show. We want you to share this show. Listen, it is bigger than camping. And you can find us at Black Folks Camp 2 on Instagram, Facebook, on X. It's at Folks Camp 2. Folks, and by the way, go to our website, blackfolkscamp2.com. And like I always say, baby, we hope you have the greatest day of your life today, and we hope tomorrow is better.